Okay, we're starting here on the top of Samach Vav and Aleph, 12 lines down. We have a statement from Rabbah, which we actually noted in yesterday's daf, which is, Amar Rabbah, Shinui Koneh, Ktiva Vitanina. The fact that a Shinui Maaseh has the ability to be Koneh or effectuate a Kinyan, that is both written in the Psukim, as well as in the Mishnayot. Ktiva, the Pasuk says, Veishivet Egzela Asher Gazal, that the thief, when he takes something, he has to return that which he has stolen. That is written in Vayikrahei by the Asham Gzelot. Mata Malomar Asher Gazal. What do you mean that he has to return the Gzelah that he stole? Of course, if he's returning the Gzelah, it's something that he stole. So what is Asher Gazal? There's a qualification. Asher Gazal is qualifying the statement before and saying, in Ke'enshe Gazal, if the item is still intact, is still extant, then Yachzir, he gives it back. The imlav, if it's not around, damim ba'alma ba'ishlume, then he makes monetary compensation, he makes in-kind payment for that which he stole. So you see here, in the requirement of the Torah to return the object that was stolen, as long as the object is still intact and can be returned, then you return the object itself. But if the object's not around, for whatever reason the object is no longer intact or is no longer extant, then you make payment instead. Now that payment is because you were koneh, because you were gozel the item and you were koneh the item. When you're koneh the item, that makes you liable for the compensation or the monies of that object. And so you see from the pasuk that there are two mechanisms of payment. There's the return of the object, or there's the payment of the value of the object. And the payment of the value object means that you were koneh it, because you were responsible then, once you were koneh it. And therefore, you're going to pay in cash and not the object itself, because the object itself is now yours. And therefore, there's no ability anymore to return the object that you stole, because that object, in a sense, doesn't exist anymore. It's in your possession. It's your possession now, and no longer belongs to the original Balim to return it to them in the original state. And therefore, you're going to make monetary compensation rather than return the object itself. Now, the difficulty with this is, that yesterday's daf, we saw that Beit Hillel also thinks that Shinui is koneh, but they learned that out from Etnan Zonah, and they have psukim by Etnan Zonah to prove that. The Baalei HaTosafot were bothered, and we mentioned this in yesterday's daf, by the fact that if Beit Hillel has a pasuk, why is Rabbah bringing a different pasuk? Why isn't he satisfied with the pasuk that Beit Hillel brings? And therefore, the Ri says, it's the Tosafot on the bottom of the previous Amud, says, V'nir l'Ri, d'lekaman mairi b'shinui achuzer l'briyato. That when Rabbah is speaking over here, he's talking about a shinui that is not a permanent change. It's a change that is reversible. And these statements here of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbah are brought by the perek further on of a gozel kama. And there, that case is a case of shinui achuzer libriato namikani. And what they're telling you here is that even something that's a reversible change, you can make a kinyan on it. Whereas, over here, the Shita Beit Hillel is talking about a case of a shinui she'enu chazer libriato. It's a permanent, irreversible change. And you can see that in the examples that were brought in the Braita by the Etnan. Those were changes that were irreversible. These changes, which we're speaking about on the Mishnah and the Gozel Kama, are changes that are significant, but they are reversible. And that's why the Baalei Tosafot claim you need two psukim, need a pasuk by Etnan to tell you about Shinui she'enu chuzer libriato, that's kinyan, which is the more obvious or the lesser of the two chidushim. And here Rabbah is coming to say that shinui chuzer libriato is also a form of kinyan. And that's why there are Amoraim who argue on Rabbah. And in arguing on Rabbah, they're not necessarily arguing on Beit Hillel. Because Beit Hillel is speaking about a case that everyone agrees, where the shinui is koneh, because that is shinui that is irreversible. Now you could have argued possibly that Etnan is a unique case, and that Etnan has its own rules because of the Gzerat HaKatuv there, and you can't extrapolate from Etnan to other areas. We saw that somewhat in Beit Shammai's Shita yesterday, where Gemara entertained the possibility that Beit Shammai only says that by Etnan, but by Gneva, he would pay Keshata Gneva. So that's the other possibility to explain why Rabbah's bringing an alternate pasuk over here, because maybe they viewed that Machloket as being unique or limited to Etnan, and not extrapolable to Gzelah. So now he says, Tanina, we also have a Mishnah. This is the Mishnayot that we'll see later on in the Masechta. a guzelitzim vasan kili. He steals wood and he makes them into utensils. Semer vasan bigadim, wool, and he makes them into clothing. Mishalem kishat agzela. He pays based on the time of when he stole it. So if that's the case, it's clear here that he has a kinyan on the object, because we're not making him return the object itself. We are not saying that he is responsible to pay for it based on its value today. We're saying it's the value at the time of the gzela, and the object is no longer returnable. Both of those indicate or evidence of the fact that there is a kinyan in the shinui that he exercises over here. And that's why he doesn't have to return the bigadim, or he doesn't have to undo them and make them into tzemer again. And that's why he can make pays compensation based on shat gzela. Inami, lo hispik, no lo achitzavao, patur. He didn't give it to the kohen before he already dies it, then he is patur. Alma, from there you see or you conclude that shinui konet, shinui works. That is referencing to the Gemara in Chulin, which is discussing reshita geiz. One of the matnot kuna is that the first of your shearings are given to the kohen. Over there in the Gemara in Chulin is machloket in the Mishnayot between the Tanaim as to what's the minimum shiur of animals that you need to shear in order to have to give reshita geiz. But once you hit that threshold of chamesh rechelot, let's say you have five ewes that you are shearing, then you're ready chayav to give to the kohen reshita geiz. Now, as Balei Tosafot point out with regards to reshita geiz is not like truma. It's not like where you set aside a portion and it goes to the kohen, and then it becomes kadosh b'kedushat truma. That's not the case. But reshita geiz, even if you set aside a portion, it doesn't belong to the kohen. You actually have to give it physically to the kohen in order for it to be reshita geiz, meaning that it's only a monetary obligation. There is no isur like that which is associated with truma, or the kedusha that is associated with truma. That's number one. Number two is, you only have to give it when it's the state of reshita geiz. Then you're obligated to give it to the kohen. Similar to peyah. With regards to peyah, you only have to give peyah when peyah is still peyah, when it's still bakama, or it's still in the grain form. Once it's already been made into bread, you don't give peyah anymore, because there's no longer the requirement or the obligation that is associated with peyah. It's not relevant to the item that you have now. And same thing with reshita geiz. There's only an obligation to give the shearings when they are still shearings. If you've already brought them to the point where you are doing work on them, you are changing their status because of that which you are doing. For instance, here it's a va'ol. When you dye them, that already takes them away from being shearings, and you're no longer obligated to give them as reshita geiz. Well, the reason that is because through that shinui, you are konet. You acquire the wool, and if you acquire the wool, you're no longer obligated to give it to the kohen, because it's yours and not his anymore. Now, at the Balei Tosafot point out, first of all, even if you segregated out the portion of the kohen, it doesn't matter, because the kohen's portion can't be segregated out up front. There's no meaning to that. Number two is, tzivao means that he dyed the whole lot over here. Because if he doesn't dye the whole lot, whatever he didn't dye, he will give as reshita geiz to the kohen. Because similar to what we said before, that there's no designate to the kohen, that means also if you didn't designate, or you designate something else and you already dyed it, that means whatever's left over and still wool in its wool form, you would have to give to the kohen. Number three is the Balei Tosafot say you have to say that this is a case where he's already chayav in reshita geiz. That's be a case where he sheared enough wool to be chayav, and then after that, he dyes the wool. Because if he dyed the wool before he got to the quantity that is chayav, then he would never be chayav in reshita geiz, because the dyeing of the wool up front takes it out of the quantity that would make up the reshita geiz. So Tosafot also gives all of these qualifications about exactly what the scenario is over here. What's interesting in the Rashi is that even though there is a monetary obligation to give the reshita geiz, but once the person has not given the reshita geiz, Rashi says, "Here, reshita geiz dekanya b'shinui, va'afilu damim lo mishalem." You don't have to even make monetary payment over here. The ain kohen yochol lazmino b'din, because the kohen cannot invite him to adjudicate the case, because the yochol omar, because the defendant here, the person who owes the reshita geiz, can say, "La'cheret nenu, I'll give it to some other kohen." Aval kodem shitzva'o. Before he dyes it, whoever grabs it it will be theirs. So I mean, even though the Baalim have the right to give the Reshita Geiz to whoever they choose, if in the end the Kohen grabs it and takes it, then he will keep it because we won't remove it from the Kohen because the Kohen has a right. This is a problem with general when we have classes of individuals who have a right to an object, but no single individual has the right. We have that by Matnot Aniyim, when the Aniyim as a class have a right to something, but no single Ani can come and make the claim. The Kohanim, by Truma, all types of classes like that. Reshita Geiz is another example of that, where the class of Kohanim as a whole have a right to the Reshita Geiz, but no single Kohen has a right to come and make the claim because it's only a claim of the whole class. It's not a claim of the individual. And therefore, Rashi says you can always push away the Kohen, number one. Number two is if somebody jumps the gun and does take it before he distributes it, then that Kohen will keep it because he can make the claim that I'm entitled because I'm a Kohen to this. And now you have to prove that it doesn't belong to you or belongs to you and it doesn't belong to our class or what I've taken. That's what Rashi says. But then Rashi also notes here that you don't have to make any payment. Could be reading too much into the Rashi, but it's a very interesting statement of Rashi. And Rashi said earlier in the Masechta as well, I'll point out to you, it says that afilu damim lo mishalem. You don't even pay any money over here. Even though seemingly you are stealing from the Kohen. Now, the fact that the Kohen has no claim against you, that's fine, because he's a class and he can't come as an individual. But that doesn't mean that you as an individual aren't obligated to give the Reshita Geiz. And when you withhold it from the Kohen, why isn't that considered to be stealing from the class of Kohanim? And you should have to repay them. So you could claim, yeah, maybe let's say the Day Shemayim you have to pay. But from Rashi, it sounds like you have no monetary obligation whatsoever because of the lack of Tovim. If there isn't a claimant, then you don't have an obligation to pay if there is no claimant. And Rashi made a similar statement earlier in the Masechta on Daf Mem Tet, Amud Aleph, Rashi, on the second to last line there, it says, Leite Labal, when the husband is no longer around, Techiyuva Emat Atila B'Shat Chavala, that the obligation happens at the time of the Chavala, meaning that the injury to the woman happened while the Baal was still alive, but then the Baal passes away, the husband passes away, Rashi says, Hare Ein La Tovin. There's nobody make a claim for the money. So again, there Rashi indicates that the lack of a claimant is a sufficient reason to say that you're not obligated in the money anymore. And that's a more general question you have to ask, is that does a person only owe money if someone can claim the money from them? But if they can't claim the money, maybe you don't owe the money. That's what Rashi seems to be indicating here. So from Rashi, it sounds like that the lack of Tovim, the lack of a claimant, means that there's no obligation on the individual to pay. Now, you could argue, and it seems to make sense, that the two might be separate, that your obligation to pay might be independent of the ability of people to make the claim. People can't make the claim, so therefore they can't take you to court. They can't force you or compel you to pay. Or in a case of safek, then for sure you don't have an obligation to pay. But in a case where you know you took the money of the other individual, just there's no claimant, why shouldn't you be obligated to pay? And so maybe you could argue on Rashi and say that you are obligated to pay, or you could say that Rashi is just speaking from a standpoint of compelling him to pay, but maybe Rashi would agree that, let's say, Yedei Shemayim, you should have to pay in these situations. Again, it doesn't seem like that from Rashi himself. That question does have implications in terms of, for instance, today, where we're mafrish, trumot, and masrot, even though there's no claimant for them. For instance, Maisarishon, we take off, which belongs to the Levi. No Levi can come today and make a definitive claim that he's entitled to it or that he should get it. So maybe you should be able to keep the Maisarishon for yourself. Or do we say that the Maisarishon belongs to the Levim and you give it to a Levi, whoever you think is a Levi, who best option to give it to a Levi, and then you're done because you've discharged your obligation to give. And so since you have now given it, you've done what you've been obligated to do. If he's a Levi, he's not a Levi, that's fine. Maaser Rishon's Chulin. So if you make a mistake and you give it to a non-Levi or a non-Kohen, it's not a big deal. So it's worth the risk to give it to who you think is a Levi. But the fact is that you should have to give it to the Levi. Why should you be able to withhold it or keep it for yourself? Just because there's no one who can make a claim against you, why does that mean that you have to keep it? Again, you could argue by Chumot Masrot, there's a separate requirement of Yitnu that you have to give. And so the obligation is to give. There it's not just a monetary obligation. Again, it's just very interesting and does have major nafkaminot, but Rashi here and before in Daf Mem Tet Amud Aleph reiterates this point that when you don't have Tovim, it's as if there's no obligation over here. So now Rabbah makes a definitive statement with regards to Shinui Ma'aseh, that for sure there, it's konen. And as Rashi says over here, it's pshitale, that when you do a maisa biyadayim, that there's a kinyan mido, right? There's a kinyan in a Torah. His safek is in this next part, which is yeush, amrei rabbonon de nikne. When it comes to yeush, the rabbonon said that there is a sufficient vehicle for kinyan through yeush. I'm just not sure if that mechanism is a mechanism in a Torah, or is that a mechanism midrabanan. Now what's interesting, in Tosafot Rei asked the question, why is Rabba so sure that Yeush is a Kinyan? Where does he find, or where does he know, where does he have a precedent or a paradigm that Yeush is Konan? First of all, most of the Amoraim, or many Amoraim, believe that Yeush is not Konan. And so why is Rabba certain that it's Konan? He's just uncertain as well as the Rabbanan Doraita, but he's certain that it's Konan. So the Rashba suggests that the source is actually from the fact that Hagonev Mihaganav is chayav for that geneva kefel after yeush balim. That the yeganav rishon becomes the baalim after yeush balim, and it's no longer gonev mi haganav where you'll be patur from kefel, rather it'll be gonev mi habalim because the ganav assumes the position of balim when there is yeush balim of the original owners. That's what the Rashba says is Rabba's source for the fact that yeush is konev. And we're going to see in a minute that the Balei HaTosafot, through the upcoming Gemara, spend time trying to get to the bottom of this and come up with the paradigm or the case that is parallel to give us this precedent of the fact that Yeush should be Konet. So Gemara says, Ido Raito Mida Dehave Amotze Aveda. If you say that it's Doraito, it's on a Torah level, it's no different than someone who finds an Aveda. Motze Aveda, Lav, Kemen Demiayish Mara Mino. By the case of an Avedo, if the owners give up hope of getting it back, then if you find it after that point in time, it becomes yours. You're able to keep it. You do not have to return it any longer. Hi, Nami. So too over here. Kevin Demiayish Mara Konile. So too over here by the Gnevar, the Gzela, if the owners give up hope of getting it back, you should be able to be Konet. Alma Koni. From there you would see it's Kone Midoraita. Or maybe it's different than an Aveda, because it's obvious why there's a difference here. But the case of Aveda, it's clear that the Yeush takes place prior to your interaction with the object. You're only taking possession of the object after the Balim already have given up hope. Of a high, given to be Surah Atyaliyade, over here, since he came into possession of it while it was still Asur, while it still belonged to the other party, the Rabbanan give you the right to keep it because of Takanat HaShavim, where we want to encourage people to do tshuva and to be able to do Beishivat Gzila Shir Gazal. So we allow the individual to keep the object after Yehush Balim, but we force them to pay for it. So over here you have two interesting items, first of all, within the position of Rabba. First of all, let's talk about the Rabbanan side, where he makes a distinction between Aveda and Gneva. He says that Aveda and Gneva are different because an Aveda comes into your possession in a mutar fashion, whereas Gneva or Gzela comes into your possession in an asur fashion. Balei Tosafot prove from this that Yeush is not the same thing as Hefker. It's not equivalent to Hefker. Because if Yeush was equivalent to Hefker, then just like the Hefker by the Aveda works when he's mafkir it before it comes into your possession, then it equally should work after it's in your possession. Because once the Balim are mafkir it, you should be able to acquire it at that point from Hefker. So the fact that you can't acquire it from Hefker after it's already in your possession shows you that Yeush does not work like Hefker. And we'll see that on the second half of today's daf as well, which is that Hefker gives you the ability to relinquish ownership even without a party that is taking possession of it or collecting on the other side. Yeush, on the other hand, really requires an acquiring party on the other side. Yeush just allows for the Baalim to retract their ownership when someone else takes possession of it. So Hefker can generate this neutral state, which is a state where you have disowned it, but someone else has yet to become the Baalim of it. On the other hand, what Yeush can do is simply allows the acquirer to take it, and it removes your Baalut from it. When they acquire it, then your ownership is removed from it. But until they acquire it, your ownership remains there. It's just now, we'll call it primed, to the state where if someone picks it up, your balut will be removed from it. But until that point, your balut still remains with it. And that's why it's different by the ganav or the gazlan. Because if it was hefker, then the ganav or gazlan would be able to take it from hefker and keep it. But the fact that yeush only works because they are giving up ownership to the one who acquires the ownership, you already acquired the ownership when it was asur. You can't now reacquire the ownership now in order to remove the balut of the other party, and therefore it remains under the auspices of the original owners, and you can't do anything about it now because you took a possession of it when it was asur. The other thing is that Tosfot speaks about is that the second sad here, which says that it's only midrabanan that yeush works, really creates a problem for the first sad. The first sad says, oh, it's just like Aveda. Just like by Aveda, yeush works, and you can be konet. So too, by Gnev and Gzela, yeush should work, and you be konet. How can you compare the cases? The other tzad of Rabbo already tells you that there's a problem in comparing the cases, because the cases are not the same. So how are you using that as a paradigm for establishing yeush, when the cases are clearly different? So Rashi says, Mikame the tate li yodei koni lo, im nit yashua balim kodim shematza ze, kana. The Tanya Beli Mitziot, because we have in Bava Mitziah, Minayin La Veda Sheshatfa Nar. How do we know that in a Veda that a river comes and washes away? Hovin it Yeshua Balim Shi Muteret. Because the Balim give up hope that you can take it. It's Mutar for you to take it. Tamal Omar. Asher Tovad Mimenu. Shavodu Mimenu. Mitziah Lishar Bnei Adam. That's only when the object is lost to this particular individual, but others, it's not lost. I mean that other people know where it is or have an idea or can access it. But something that is yestazu, that is lost to everyone, because the river washes it away, then nobody can get it until it gets dumped out or put on the land somewhere else. Al-Mokoni. From there you can see that there is a kinyan. Because of the fact that once it's lost from you, the Torah says it's not yours anymore. V'hacha, v'gzeilu dati yudei mikame yeush, v'ade yeush, sagadei bedamim. So to over here, where it comes into his possession before yeush, and then there's yeush, you could just make payment. So it's clear Rashi already notes the difference. By the case of Aveda, you don't have a requirement to return it. If there's yeush there, then you can keep it. On the other hand, by the case of Gzeilam, even if there is yeush, you're still obligated to pay back. You just don't have to give that item back, but you still have to make a payment of damim. And that makes the comparison somewhat difficult, meaning that how are you learning from Aveda to Gzeila? That's number one. Number two is Rashi's explanation here is very difficult, and many of you showed him note, because Rashi's example of yeush working by Aveda is a case that's a gzeirat hakatuv. It's a gzeirat hakatuv that when it's lost to everyone, shatfanar, that there's an automatic yeush, that we assume or we impose yeush here because it's lost to everyone. And therefore, when you pick it up from shatfanar, then you don't have to return it because you can assume that there was yeush, or that it's deemed to be as if there was yeush because it was lost to everyone in like a flood that comes through town and washes everything away. So therefore, they reject Rashi's example. And if you look in the Balei HaTosafot, they explain over here that Omeri, Danafkalan Deyush Koneh B'Aveda Meha. This is the example by an Aveda we learn from. Mash Simlam Yuchedet Sheish La Simanim. Just like a Simla, which the reason that Simla is brought on the Pasuk over there, we learned this before actually in some of the Riboy Mio to Riboy or Klal Pratu Klal that we had earlier in the Perek, that the word Simla comes to teach you that it's talking about an object that has Simanim. Ve'yeshla tovim, and it has claimants. Perish. Ayudei she'yeshla simanim, yeshla tovim. Because it has simanim, therefore it has a claimant. Because a siman makes it that the person will not give up hope because he thinks he can get it back because of the simanim. She'en abalim ityashim, kem she'yesh ben siman. They don't give up hope because there is a siman. But then he says, ve'kashu l'rbeinotam. D'laman damar simanim lab da'oraito. Machloken in Baba Metziah, whether simanim are mina Torah, or simanim are only the Rabbanan. Now, if you're telling me that the source for the fact that yeush is koneh over here is based on simanim, then it would have to be that simanim are d'oraita, because we're learning out now that yeush works as a kinyan for gzela mi d'oraita, like the paradigm of Aveda. V'teiritz, the Rabbeinu Tam answers, the alpha gav the siman lav d'oraita, even if you think that simanim are not d'oraita, v'ein machzir kim ve'edim, and therefore, the only way you return an object is if you bring witnesses to the fact that it was yours. People don't give up hope for something or from something that has a siman in it. Because then he asks around about it, and he can try to find it, and then bring the edim. So what the Rabbeinu Tam says, it's important factor here in that machloket of whether simanim are d'oraita or simanim d'rabbanan. Even according to one who says simanim are d'rabbanan, simanim still have impact on the owner's interaction with the object. So yes, he can't make a claim through simanim to get it back. But he won't give up hope because there are simanim. Even though simanim are not d'oraita, the fact that there are simanim gives him hope that he will get it back, and therefore there's no yeush. Even according to one who says that simanim are d'rabbanan. If there's no siman, he doesn't know who to ask or what to ask. He can't identify it in any way. And he doesn't think you'll ever find edim. So then Tosafot would ask the problem, the secondary problem. Okay, now we came up with the paradigm within Aveda that works. But then in the next Tosafot he says, if you have yeush after the object comes into your possession, it doesn't work. That's what we otherwise known as yeush shalom idat. Machloket Rav and Abaye, that we're going to spend a number of dapim in Bava Metzia on, Yesh Shalom Idat. Over there we paskin, it's one of the Yal Kagams, where we paskin like Abaye, but the Yesh Shalom Idat. So Yesh doesn't help after the fact. So why over here does it help after the fact? So he says, Demetzia Nami, Vehi Shaloya Konel Yanzeh, Shaloyitz Derech Lashiv, Uli Pater the Gamre, Hol Vikfar Nitzchayev Bahashava, Mikoma Koma Yakonel Yanzeh, So what the Balei Tosafot say is that you actually can create a similar scenario by Aveda. Which is, you're right, Yeush before the fact in Aveda gives you a right to keep the object. To find the object and keep it, it's yours. On the other hand, Yeush after the fact, it won't help you. Yeush Shalom Idat after the fact does not help you. If you're already in possession of the object and then the Balei have Yeush, you can't keep it. You're obligated to give it back. But Yeush still has an impact over there, and that is that you do not have to return the object. Once there's Yeush Balim, even if it happened after the Aveda was in your possession, you only have to pay back Damim. You only have to pay back the value of the object, not the object itself. Now all of a sudden we have a paradigm that looks exactly like a neighbor of Gzela. That's exactly what happens here by Gzela. The Yeush, after it's in your possession, does not exempt you from having to give it back. It doesn't make it yours. It makes it yours that you don't have to return the actual object. But you still have to make compensation, you have to pay back. And now Tosafot has created a paradigm within Aveda, which is matched by Geneva and Gezela, which is that Yeush works by Aveda to free you of the obligation to return the actual object and only have to make payment when Yeush comes after you already found it. So too, by Geneva and Gezela, the Yeush, after it already came into your possession illegally, makes that you don't have to return the actual object, but you still have to make monetary compensation. And now we have a paradigm from Aveda that works over here by Gzela. The Rav Yosef Amar, back in the Gemara, Rav Yosef argues on Rabbah here and says, Yeush eno koneh v'afilu midrabanan. Yeush does not work, even midrabanan. It's what is always known as Yeush kadi, or Yeush kadi, meaning that Yeush by itself is not a sufficient vehicle for creating kinyan. We're going to see later in today's daf that Yeush can be mitzareif, it can be joined with other items to create a kinyan. But standalone Yeush, according to Rav Yosef, has no ability to create a kinyan, as opposed to Rabbah, who's certain it creates a kinyan, is just not sure if it's a kinyan de Rabbanan or kinyan de Oraita. So Eitvei Rav Yosef the Rabbah, so Rav Yosef challenges Rabbah and says, Gazal chametz varvala v'pesach. Person steals chametz, and now it's gone through Pesach. Omer lo, harei shalcha lefanecha. He says to him, you know what? Here's your chametz back. I have it. Ve'shivet gzela asher gazal, and gives it right back to him. He says, here you go, I've returned it to you. The chametz is worthless, that's true. The chametz is now chametz revela v'pesach. It's too bad, because you can say, harei shalcha lefanecha, as Rashi says is, because it's kemotshu, it's identical to what he took, he's giving back. The hezek here is a hezek shenu nikar. It's not a visible hezek over here, because it's something that you can't see in the object itself, and therefore you can return it to him, to the original owner, and he's done. Hi, came into Mata Idan Isura. So Rav Yosef says, according to you, Rabbah, at the time that the Isur comes, meaning that on Chatzot, on Erev Pesach, when Chametz goes Asur, Vadai Miyayesh, the Balim definitely give up hope. They have no interest in this Chametz anymore. That Chametz is worthless to them at this point in time, so they for sure have Yeush at that point in time. If you tell me that Yeush is significant enough or sufficient grounds for a Kinyan, right? Why can he say back to him, look, here's your chametz, take it back. He should have to pay him full money. Because he can say, listen, I gave up hope on it. Erev Pesach and Chatzot, I got rid of all chametz in my possession. I was miyayish from the chametz. That means at that moment, the chametz still had value to it. And that means the gazlan was koneh at that moment. He's koneh at that moment means he was koneh when the chametz still had value. He's koneh when he still has value, he has to pay at that time. When he makes the kinyan, when the ownership transfers, that's when the obligation sets in. That obligation set in at the moment that the Isur Chametz came, right before the Isur Chametz came about, when the Chametz still had value. And that means that you should have to now, you can't return the Chametz, you have to return its equivalent value. The fact that you don't have to do that, you say, Arei Shalchaf and Echa, proves that there's no Yehush over here. And even if there is Yehush, it's not Koneh. Amale, Rabba says back to Rav Yosef, Ki kamina ana zemicheish v'zeru tzedek not. This is what goes back to what Tosfot said before, that how does Yehush work over here? That's when one party is miyayish, he gives up hope, and the other party wants it, and he wants to keep it. Hi, in our situation here, ze miyayish, v'zein or tzelik not. The Baalim are giving up ownership, but the gazlan has no interest in taking possession of it. It doesn't benefit him to take possession of it. It's also the Isur Chametz for him, and if he takes possession of it, he can't return it. So for him, there's no value in taking possession of it. And so here you see this idea that Yehush only works when the Yehush is a relinquishment of the ownership of the Baalim, but it requires someone on the other side to take it in order to remove his ownership or for have the Yehush or the Kinyan Yehush to go into effect. Again, unlike Hefker where you can disown it or you can remove your ownership completely, even without another party on the other side. Okay, Eit ve'abai l'rabo. So now Abaye challenges Rabo or Robo. Kurbano, velo agazul. It says by the Kurban Olah that your Kurban has to be brought, the Reach Nichoach Lashem, but velo agazul can't be something that is stolen. You can't bring a stolen item as a Kurban. Hechi dami, what exactly is this scenario where you're bringing a stolen Kurban? Ilei malifnei Yehush. If you're telling me it's before the Baalim gave up hope of getting this animal back, lamalikra, what do I need a pasuk for? Pshita. It's straightforward that you can't bring it as a korban, because if you have gezel velonit yashua balim, that's what we just spoke about, that when it comes to ownership, ownership is comprised of two components. Ownership means that I have ba'alut, I am the owner over it, but it also means that I have the control over it. In order to be makdish something, you need both ownership and control. In this scenario, each of the parties here is missing one of those two items. The Baalim have ownership, but they lack control. The Gazlan has control, but he lacks ownership. And because of the way that Hektesh is formulated, it has to be yours in both aspects in order to be Makdishit. Therefore, it's Pshita here that if you don't have Yehush Baalim, that the Gazlan has no ability to be Makdish this item. On the other hand, Elalav must be then Lachar Yehush. It must be that it's after Yehush. Shmamina Yehush Lo Kani. You see from this that Yehush doesn't help. Why? Because the Torah says, Korbano velo mina gazul, that it's your Korban and not something that is stolen. If Yehush had the ability to create a Kinyan, then it would be your Korban then. It would be your animal at that point in time. It would have shifted the ownership from the owners to the thief. And then it would be the thief's animal and he could bring it as a Korban if he so chooses. So if Yehush is really Koneh, then why can't he bring the animal as a Korban? Again, the Gemara's assumption here is that he stole the chulin animal, and now he wants to be makdish the animal. If there's no Yehush of the Baalim, he doesn't have the ability to be makdish it because he lacks ownership. He has control, but he lacks ownership. In a case where the Baalim already have Yehush, if you think Yehush is koneh, then he should have the ability to be makdish it, and it should be a kosher korban. On the other hand, if you think Yehush is not koneh, then that's the problem here. The fact that Yehush is not koneh, that's why when he tries to be makdish it, it doesn't work. That's why it's korbano v'loman gazul, because he's taking someone else's korban or someone else's animal and trying to bring it on the mizbeach. Tomorrow's sugya is exactly your question with, isn't this a mitzvah baba veira? Tosfot already addresses the issue here and points you to what he's going to say tomorrow. Tosfot over here says, v'lo mifsal mishum mitzvah baba veira. That's not a problem on mitzvah veira. Hol v'kanui lo kodem shektisho. Because the kinyan happens before the hekdesh. What Tosfot points out tomorrow is that it's only called a mitzvah baba veira if the hekdesh is what generates the change in ownership. If by your being makdish the animal, you generate the kinyan, then that's a mitzvah baba aveira. Because your ownership and the hekdesh happen simultaneously, and that means that the aveira is a contributing factor to the animal or the object becoming a korban. On the other hand, in this instance, the kinyan would have been completed before the animal was ever kadosh, before it was ever a korban. Then it's your animal. Then after the fact, you want to take your animal and be makdish it? Go ahead. That's not called a mitzvah haba b'aveira. That's how Tosafot answers. That's how Tosafot distinguishes between case where it's called mitzvah b'aveira and over here where there's no mitzvah haba b'aveira. If he's not koneh, Tosafot says, v'alilo kani b'yehush mitzal. The korban is pasul. Mikom makom kadoshu. Tosafot says here you have the ability to make it kadosh, that you can be makdishit, even though it's pasul. Although there are those that believe that you can't even make it, if the jeish lo koneh and lo kaniya, that you can't even be makdishit. Amalei rovo ulertameich hadetanya. What are you going to do with this braita? Mishkavo v'lo agazul. Mishkavo is written by the Zav. It's one of the tumota Zav, is tumata mishkav. And there it says mishkavo in the possessive form. And the braita, the midrash halacha, is doresh the same thing as it did by korbano. It's korbano v'lo min agazul. Over there it says mishkavo v'lo min agazul. Hey chidami, what exactly is the scenario? If he stole wool and then made it into a bed or into bedding, is there anybody out there that says that a shinui maisa, when you take an action on an object and you make a significant change in it, that you are not koneh? A little secret, there is someone, and we bumped into them in yesterday's daf. That was Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai yesterday said that even a shinui chashuv is not koneh. So the Gemara avoids doing that or saying that because it's Beit Shammai. And we don't want to set up a braita or set this up. And again, even though there are Tanaim later on in the Masechta who agree with this Shita Beit Shammai, we generally group them together and assign their opinions all to this Shita Beit Shammai. And therefore we don't bring it up. So that Rava says it's as if everybody says, Shuni Maisa, everybody says it's Koneh. Elamai Tchalameimar. So Gemara says, so there's nobody who thinks that Shinu Maisa is not Koneh. So therefore that can't be the scenario there. Elamayit Techal Meimar. What's the scenario here? The Gazal Mishkav Bechavrei. He stole his friend's bed. So now what the scenario is, that's interesting. Rashi claims over here that there's a Gzeret HaKatuf, that when it comes to Mishkav of a Zav, that you can only be Mitamei Mishkavo, but you cannot be Mitamei Mishkav of your friend, meaning that you can't be tamei mishkav of something that doesn't belong to you. And that's gzeirat hakatuv, that otzei et mishkav gazul she'eino naseh ava tumah letamei adam. Doesn't become an ava tumah, that's what Rashi says. Rashi and Tosafot are very disturbed by this because we have many examples throughout Shas where ganavim come into the house, or you have a isha nachriya that comes into the house, an isha nida that comes into the house. And then you assume that everything in the house is tamei mishkav or tumat mishkav. And that's even without permission. That's even without your knowledge. All of those tumult take place or are effective even without it being theirs. And you see that they can pass the tumah or have the tumah be effective on the mishkav even when it's not their mishkav. Now, the way to explain the Rashi or to understand the Rashi is the fact that the requirement of mishkav is that it has to be designated as a mishkav, or particular for the usage of mishkav. Because if it's not designated for mishkav, you can say, amod v'naseh melachteinu, go and do your regular job, and it's not called mishkav. Or if the owner decides that it's not a mishkav, then it doesn't have a din of mishkav anymore. So since mishkav is particular or unique to the individual who owns it, because he's the only one who can determine it's mishkav, that's why other parties or outside parties can't make it tamei, because they can't make that designation or determination. That's why you'd have to explain Rashi. But again, Rashi is difficult. And therefore, the Balei HaTosafot make an alternate explanation over here. Mefaresh read, Gazal mishkav dechavrei shegazal orot shel balabayit she'im mechusarim ele yichud. He stole throws, he stole hides from the balabayit that don't have anything left to become tamei except for you to designate them for their utility. Ve'ein tzarich shum tikun. They require no activity or action to change them. Ve'ein chaser rak machshava. The only thing that's left is you have to be think about them that you want to use them for that purpose. So therefore, the gazlan or the ganav in that case cannot fill in for the balim and generate that machshava that they do not have the ability to do. Aval gazalu ganav mishkav gamur dechavrei mitamei mishkav lekuleyama. If you steal something that's already a mishkav, or something that's already a moshav, and then you sit on it or you lay on it, you can be mitameit. It doesn't matter that you don't own it, doesn't matter that it belongs to someone else, you can be mitameit. So that's the way that the Reed deals with this. That's what he thinks the case is over here. It's not stealing the actual mishkav. It's not sitting or sleeping on someone else's bed. It's simply that it's something that is on the threshold of becoming something that can be mekabel tumat mishkav. It requires nothing except the designation as a mishkav. Then if someone comes along, an outside party, and goes in and lays on it, that doesn't change making it into a mishkav. That doesn't change the fact that it has yet to be designated by the Baalim as a mishkav. And the Ganav or Gazlan cannot accomplish that without the Baalim. There is a third approach here, which is that mishkav has interesting dynamics of tumah. Mishkav makes something tameh because the person actually lays on it and they're in contact with it and they make it tameh. But there's also a rule of mishkav al yom ketachton, which is something that the zav lays on, whether it's on top of them or underneath them, that not only is the mattress or the object that is closest to them tameh, that tumah passes all the way to either the highest mattress or the lowest mattress under him and makes them tameh. So what some of the Rishonim suggest over here is that's exactly the balance between Rashi and the Tosafot, which is that, yes, a gazlan or a outside party can make your bed or your moshav or mishkav tameh, but that's only to make it tameh in the normal fashions of tumah, of tumat mishkav and moshav. What they can't do is get the extra upgraded tumah that a zav has, which he's able to make mishkav al yom kitachton, that he makes the upper mattress and the lower mattresses of the same level of tumah. That only happens if it's your mishkav. So that's how they split the din here and say, yes, you can create tumat mishkav even without owning it, but you can only create basic tumat mishkav. What you can't create is that enhanced type of mishkav or tumat mishkav that the zav has, unless it's yours. So now that what we established is that the case here must be a case where he's stealing something that is already a mishkav. So hachanami, by the case of the korban, is the gazal korban de chavrei. It's not a case where he took the animal that's chulin and now he's makdish it after the fact. That's not the scenario here. The scenario here is a case where it was already mukdash. It already belongs to hekdesh and you steal the animal and now you're bringing it as a korban in the mikdash. So Rashi brings two formulations of what that means when you bring a korban in the mikdash. He says the first formulation is very interesting. He says, Sheikdish chaviro ulolam lifnei yeush. His friend was makdish animals before Yeush. Ve'itzrich l'shmeinan. It comes to tell you, de'enu ula l'ratzon klal. When you bring this korban, it doesn't work at all. Va'filu the balim arishonim. Even for the original owners. It's an amazing statement of Rashi here. Why shouldn't the animal, why shouldn't the korban be good for the original owners? The original owner still owns it. And this person who stole it now is bringing it to the mikdash. So in the end, it ends up on the mizbeach, and the owners still own it. Why doesn't that discharge his obligation? Why isn't that his korban? Why isn't it a good korban for him? Rashi says, that's what it teaches you here, that korbano, velo in a gazul, if someone brings a stolen korban, meaning that was already a kedesh and brings that stolen korban, the balim do not get credit for it. It's not the ratzon, even for the balim. So what you have to say is something along the lines that gazul or gezel is so repugnant to the mikdash, or because then it becomes something inherent in the korban, that the korban is no longer a good korban, irrespective of the original ownership or the new owner that is over here. Lishna achrina. The other lashon Rashi brings is exactly along the lines of what you're suggesting, which is the gazal korban de chavrei hilkach. Afilu lachar yeush. Even after yeush, lo kanya. The gazlan is not koneit. The korban ain't on exal. You can't steal a korban. Because it belongs to God now. And wherever it is, it's in God's possession already. So exactly what you're suggesting over here, that once it's in the possession of Hekdesh, you can't remove it from the possession of Hekdesh. And therefore, you can't steal a korban. So in that case, the first Lashon of Rashi says that we're talking about before Yeush. And if it's before Yeush, the Chiddush here is that it doesn't even work for the Baalim themselves. It's no good. It's no longer good for the Baalim Rishonim. And the second Lashon of Rashi, it's saying even after Yeush, the Gazlan can't utilize the animal, because it remains in the possession of Hekdesh, and therefore he never takes enough possession for the animal or the korban to become his, meaning the gazlan's korban. That's the way Rash explains it. The Tosafot over here tries to deal with why you need a pasuk, or what exactly is the scenario that we're speaking about over here. Because he speaks about, if it's a chatat, then you can't switch balim. If it is an olah, or if it's a shlamim, that you're not allowed to sell. You can't give up your ownership of an olah shlamim. So then what's the scenario here? So he says maybe it's a Korban Pesach that we're speaking about, because a Korban Pesach, you can have people join your Chabura or change ownership in the Korban Pesach. So maybe that's the scenario that we're speaking about. Because even though that's a little difficult, because the Pasuk is brought, Korbano is found by an Olah, which makes it sound like we're speaking about an Olah. And so Tosfot is left with the difficulty into coming up with the exact scenario where this is relevant, and that you would have this Havamina that the Korban should leave the ownership of the Balim and move to the ownership of the Gazlan. And now the Gemara continues. Etve Abaye Rav Yosef. So now Abaye challenges Rav Yosef. Orocha Balabayit. When it comes to hides of the Balabayit, Machshava Mitamatan. Once he decides that he wants to utilize them for something that they have immediate utility for, then they can be Mikabo Tuma immediately. So if he decides he wants to use it as a throw on his couch, he wants to use that as a cover or a saddle on the donkey, as soon as he makes that decision and it requires no more fixing, no change in the item, then they are mitame. B'shel Abdan, when it comes to the tanner, ein machshava mitamatan. When he makes that decision, it's not a permanent decision, because he always has the option, and he has in mind that he's going to sell it. The Bala Bayit, who is a regular layperson, once he makes that decision, then that decision, in a sense, is permanent, because he's not going to back out of it. He doesn't have this two tracks where either he keeps it for himself or he sells it. The only thing he's going to do is keep it for himself. So once he decides he's going to use it, that's already allows it to be Mekabel Tuma. Then the Abdan, who normally sells hides, he's someone who normally is transacting in these items. So that option or that path is always open to him. And therefore his Machshava is not sufficient to make it into something permanent that he'll keep, because he always has that option or that out that he will sell it to someone. If someone comes in and wants to buy it, he would sell it. And so therefore, machshava is not enough. Shel ganav, machshava mitamatan. When it comes to a ganav, his machshava is enough to make it tamei. Shel gazlan, ein machshava mitamatan. But a gazlan, his machshava does not work. B'shem says just the opposite. Shel gazlan, machshava mitamatan. By the gazlan, the machshava works. Shel ganav, ein machshava mitamatan. Why? The fish lo nityashu ba'alim. Because the ba'alim did not give up hope. Bishmamina, from this it's pretty clear, yeush kone or yeush kana, that yeush is sufficient grounds to be kone. Because the reason that we say that machshava doesn't work by the ganav, according to Bishmamina, is the fish lo nityashu ba'alim. Because the ba'alim didn't give up hope. Implicit in that is, if they did give up hope, then his machshava would be sufficient, because he would own it. He would have a kinyan on it. So now, what exactly go through the cases here. We explained the balabait, we explained the case of the abdan. The case of the ganav and the gazlan goes to the fundamental difference between a gazlan and a ganav. Remember that a gazlan comes and steals in broad daylight. He's not afraid of you seeing him. He comes and takes the item away from you while you're watching, or even with other people knowing about it, he comes and steals. A ganav, on the other hand, comes in the dark of night, tries to hide. He does not want to be known. He does not want to be caught. So now, based on that, the Chachamim, Rabbi Shimon, argue about how balim, how owners view those two different types of theft. And that is, the Chachamim, or the Tanakhama, says, shel ganav, machshava mitamatan. When it comes to a ganav, the balim are more likely to give up hope, because they don't know who it is. They don't know who the ganav is, and they have no way to find out who the ganav is. So if they don't know, they don't know who to pursue, they don't know how to get justice done, and therefore they give up hope of ever seeing it again. On the other hand, shel gazlan, ein machshava mitamatan. But the gazlan who stole in broad daylight, and you know who it is, then you have hope that you're going to get it back, because you know who you have to go after, and you're just hoping that you can find someone who can carry out the justice and get the object back. So therefore the balim do not give up hope of getting it back, because they know who the thief is, and they're going to pursue him until they get it back. Rabbi Shimon says just the opposite. And he says, the fact that the gazlan stole from you in broad daylight means that the gazlan is not afraid of anyone. He's not afraid of being taken to court. He's not afraid of the police coming and getting him, because he's obviously a guy who's carrying enough power, or that the police are afraid of, or the courts are afraid of, and they're not going to go after or pursue him in any way. The fact that he is so brazen to come and steal and not worry about you knowing who he is, that tells you that he has enough power that he's not going to get caught, he's not going to be brought to justice. And therefore the balim give up hope, because they know this type of guy, nobody is going to take him down. Then the ganav, even though you don't know who he is, the fact that he hides means that he's afraid. If he's afraid, there's a chance that the authorities could catch him and compel him to pay you back, and therefore you would not give up hope. So that's the difference between the position of the Tanna Kamma and Rabbi Shimon. The problem is, for Rabbi Yosef, as the Bais I'm pointing out here, is that if you have Yael Shkoneh, that's against Rabbi Yosef's position. So Amalei, Rabbi Yosef responds to Bais and says, Ocho Maeskinon, Kagon Shekitz An. It's a case where he cut them. They didn't just do a machshava, they also did a maaseh. They did an action, they straightened out the edges of the hides, they did something active, biadayim, on the hide. Now, we know that when you do a shinui maaseh is kone according to everyone. So why is there any question in this braita at all? Everybody should be kone over here. So what we point out is that kitz'an, as Tosfos points out, is that kitz'an is a subpar maaseh. It's not a full-fledged maaseh, and here we get our introduction into the fact that there are different levels of maaseh. There's a maaseh biyadayim, which is significant, and it's so significant that it's kone. That makes a kinyan, and everybody agrees. There are other types of maasim, which by themselves are not sufficient to make a kinyan, but together with yeush, they could make a kinyan. And that's what Rav Yosef is saying over here. That, yes, kitz'an, the fact that you straighten out the edges, you slice a little piece over here, that's not a significant enough action to make it a shinui maaseh that you're kone. On the other hand, it is a shinui maaseh that if together with something else, you could join them and make the partnership between them in order to create the kinyan. That's what Rav Yosef says over here. If together with this kitz'an, this subpar maaseh of yeush, the two of those items together can generate a kinyan. And that's why it works in this braita, or that's my answer to the braita. Yeush does work, but it's working because there is a subpar maaseh. The yeush was also a subpar type of kinyan. It doesn't work. But if I bring them together, the two of them together can add up to a proper kinyan. And that's how I'm going to explain the braita. Okay, matrif klo rabba bar chanan. Halo itz bashanu, kan? Wait a minute. Isn't the scenario over here in this Mishnah from Kelim that we are bringing, isn't that qualified by the fact that we are speaking about an itzba? Now Rashi says an itzba is a hide that you use as a table or something to eat on. Whereas the Geonim say that an itzba is either a saddle or some sort of cover, maybe akin to the modern day Hebrew word itzub, which means to dress up or decorate. The key character trait of the itzba is it needs nothing to be done to it to make it functional. It's the equivalent of, I would call, when you go out for a picnic, that you take along with you a sheet or something to put down where you're going to eat. And so you have some sort of picnic blanket that you put down. That's what this itzba is. It's the equivalent of that picnic blanket that you would eat on. So it needs absolutely no change to it. It can be functional immediately without any maaseh. Even though some people might make some alterations or small changes to it to improve it aesthetically, that's not considered a ma'akev in terms of the completion of the item or being ra'ui as a kli l'melacha, and therefore it's mekabel tumah right away. And the problem is, if that Mishnah in Kelim is talking about a case of an itzba, since it is the Mishnah that immediately precedes the Mishnah that we just quoted before, where there's no requirement of maaseh, then Rav Yosef's whole answer goes out the window, because he says there was a requirement of a maaseh of to do a small cutting, whatever it is. Itzba requires no cutting, and that's the whole character trait of an itzba. Bitzba ain't sriacha kitzua. Itzba requires no cutting whatsoever. It's not. We have a Mishnah in Kelim. Komakom shein chisaron melacha. Anytime when there's no lack of action to be taken, machshava mitamato. Then machshava is sufficient to make the object ready to be mekabel tuma. So if you have in mind to utilize the item, and then it requires no physical maaseh to be done in order to prepare it for that utility or that use, then the object can be mekabel tuma right away. Yesh chisaron melacha. On the other hand, if it requires some activity or some sort of change or action taken to it in order to make it functional, then a machshava mitamato. Then the machshava is not sufficient because you still, even when you think about it, using it that way, it's still not reached the point of its final stage, its completion to be used for the utility that you want. Chutz v'nitzba. The exception to that rule is an itzba, which an itzba doesn't require any maaseh, or any maaseh that it requires is insignificant to the point where the machshava works, and machshava is sufficient by an itzba. If that's the case, then that mishnah that we quoted before from Kelim, talking about an itzba, there's no maaseh involved. Then how can Rav Yosef suggest that there was a kitz'an that together with the eush makes it that it works over there? You don't need it. The whole point of itzba is that you don't need anything in order to bring it into the world of tumah. So Elama Rava, Hai Milta Koshi Bar Rabba the Rav Yosef Esrim Etartin Shnin. For 22 years, Rabba challenged Rav Yosef's position from this Mishnah. This question that Abaye raised, Rabba used it as a question on Rav Yosef to say that my position is right and that you are wrong about the fact that Yehush is not Koneh. Velo if Barka, Adiyati Rav Yosef Bereisha Uparka. Rav Yosef didn't answer the question until he became the Rosh Yeshiva. Once he became the Rosh Yeshiva, he came up with the answer. We know about this story. It's in the last daf in Brachot, the story of Rabba and Rav Yosef, which is that Rabba and Rav Yosef were contemporaries. They were the Gedolei Ador, and they were the people were trying to determine who they should make into the Rosh Yeshiva. They sent to Eretz Yisrael about who should be the Rosh Yeshiva. They, should it be Rav Yosef, who is C9? Rav Yosef, who is a master in Bikiyut, he knows everything. Or Rabba, who doesn't know everything, but he's an Oker Harim. He's someone who is able to do pilpul, answer questions, figure out stirot, and all that. Who should we make it? The Gemara, they sent their church, Israel sends back to them, Sinai Adif, Shakot Tzrichin, the Mari Chitaya. Sinai is Adif because everybody needs the person who sells the wheat. Everybody needs the silo, in a sense. Because you need the raw material. Even if you have a great pilpul, without the raw material, you can't do anything. So Rav Yosef is more fundamentally needed because he has all the knowledge, he has all the information. And therefore, the Rav Yosef should be the Rosh Yeshiva. Despite that fact, Rav Yosef demurs and allows Rabba to become the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabba becomes the Rosh Yeshiva for 22 years, and then right after that, Rav Yosef rules for just under 2 years and passes away. The reason that Rav Yosef demurs over there is because he had bumped into a Chaldai who told him that when you become the king, you're going to die. And so Rav Yosef said that he'd rather have Rabba become the Rosh Yeshiva because that would give him a longer life. The Gemara there and the Rishonim deal with how could he believe him? Why was he listening to these Chaldaim, these astrologers that were telling this information? Similar story appears by Rabbi Kiva as well with Rabbi Kiva and his daughter. But nevertheless, Rabbi Yosef took heed to that and did not become the Rosh Yeshiva, or basically he was Choshesh for it. You don't have to believe what they say, but at least be Choshesh. And there the Gemara says that because he was not Tochek et Hasha'ah, he didn't press his time, meaning that he didn't try to become Rosh Yeshiva before his time, he beat time. So he was able to live for an additional 22 years because he didn't become the Rosh Yeshiva. So that's what the Gemara is referencing to over here, that Rabba was the Rosh Yeshiva for 22 years. And during that period of time, Rav Yosef did not act like a Rosh Yeshiva. Only after Rabba's passing, when Rav Yosef became Rosh Yeshiva, then he took on the mantle of the Rosh Yeshiva, he acted like a Rosh Yeshiva. And here the Gemara says he also came up with an answer to this question. And the answer was, Josh, what you were asking about before, Shinui Hashem ke Shinui Maaseh Dami. That Shinui Hashem is equivalent to Shinui Maaseh. Shinui Maaseh, my time. Why is a Shinui Maaseh Koneh? Hata Mikara Itzim. Hashtag Elim. Because in the beginning it was wood. Now it's utensils. Shinui Hashem Nami. Shinui Hashem should work the same way. Mikara Korilei Mashka. Before this they called it a hide. Vahashta Barzin. And now, this is the Aramaic word for an Itzba. That is, now it's an itzba, now it's a rabazin, now it's a picnic table, now it's a picnic blanket that you can put out, it's like a table. The name is changed. And if the name is changed, then it's the equivalent of like the Shinu Maaseh. Vare, now the Gemara asks the question that you raised. Wait a minute, does Shinu Hashem really work? Don't we have the case of Meirish, which is, Vare Meirish, Deika Shinu Hashem. When we talk about a beam that was stolen, even though there is Shinu Hashem, Demikara Kishura, before it was put into the house as a beam, it was called a board or a beam. And now it's called the roof. Or now it's called a cross beam, whatever it is that the name that changed. Before it was just a piece of wood. Now it's supporting the house. It's one of the support struts. It's one of the cross beams of the house. It's part of the roof of the house. So the name changed. And yet, it's not. We have a Mishnah further on, and a Mishnah in the Gittin as well. Alameirish Hagazul. Someone who steals a board, someone who steals this type of beam, shiban oba birah, that he builds it into his house, shnotel damav mipnei takanat hashavim. He pays money for it, and he does not have to give back the board itself. Even though, again, it's completely intact, and even though he could give it back as it was when he stole it, we don't obligate him to give it back, because of what's called takanat hashavim, nobody is going to do tshuva if they think they have to break their house down or dismantle their house to give the object back. So we give them the option to pay money or the value in lieu of the board in order that he can keep the board and do tshuva without having to destroy his house. Again, it was a way to facilitate tshuva without making the burden too hard or making it impossible for the person to ever want to do tshuva because the ramifications would be too great. But over there, you see there's a shinui hashem. And even with the shinui hashem, we still say that he would have to give the board back. It says, time of b'nei takanat ha-shavim. It's only because of takanat ha-shavim that he has a right to pay. Ha lav hochi hader b'nei. Had it not been for that, he would have to give it back. There's no kinyan. Even though you have a shinui hashem there, it doesn't count as a kinyan because had it not been for takanat ha-shavim, had it not been for that takanat de-rabbanan, we would have compelled you to give the board back. And that means that you didn't have a kinyan. That means there was no kinyan there. Shinui hashem does not work as a kinyan. Samar Rav Yosef, Meresh Shmo Alav. It says, you can't ask me from a board because a Meresh, a board or a beam, maintains or retains its name. And that is the Tanya in the description of the Beit HaMikdash. It says there in Yechezkel, Tzla'ot HaBayit, Elo HaMelatatin. The ribs of the house, those are the Melatatin. VeHa'uvim, the Ovim are Elo HaMerishot, those are the beams. So over here, Rashi describes what these items are. He says, the Melatatim, Amalti Kedamina Beshutafim, Shnotim Nisarim, Savim Pitchei Chalunot, Uptachim. They are door frames and window frames that you put in, and they have the placement for the boards to be put into them. So that is what the Tzla'ot HaBayit are. The Tzla'ot HaBayit are these window frames and these door frames. So that's what Tzla'ot is, Melatatim. VeHa'uvim, the Ovim are Elu HaMerishot. The Ovim, the thick ones, those are the beams, these big beams that are crowed across that hold up the roof, allow you to build a second floor on top of them. Those structural beams, they are called Merishot. They're still called the Merishot. They're called the Merishot from beginning to end. And that means that the name never changes. That even though originally it was a Merish, and now it's built into the house, it's still called the Merish, even when it's built into the house, because you see here, when they're talking about the description of the construction of the Mikdash, they say the Ovim are Merishot. And they use the term Merish for something that's in a finished product or in a finished building. And so therefore there really is no Shinui Hashem over here. Eino Hachanami Shinui Hashem does work, but Shinui Hashem has to really be a Shinui Hashem. Over here it's not a Shinui Hashem. Because we see the fact that it's still called a Merish even after it's built into the building. Now, over here, Bali HaTosafot make the same note as they make before, which is, remember we said that within Shinui Maaseh, there are different gradations of Shinui Maaseh. There's a Maaseh which is so significant, be a Daim, that Maaseh itself can create a Kinyan without anything else. There are also smaller Maasim, like we saw here by Kitz'an, by Rav Yosef, that only together with, or in conjunction with the Yush, can they create a Kinyan. What the Bali HaTosafot say over here, the same is true by Shinui Hashem. And he says here, the last Tosafot on the previous Amud, he says, Lav kishinu maaseh mamash. It's not literally a shinu maaseh. The shinu maaseh luchudei kani. Because the shinu maaseh is sufficient or self-sufficient that it can create a kinyan by itself. Aval shinu hashem greida lo kani. Shinu hashem by itself does not have significant enough power to create a kinyan below yeush o shinu maaseh. It needs something else to come along with it. It either requires Yeush, or it requires a subpar Shinu Maaseh together with the Shinu Hashem to create the Kinyan over here. So when Rabbi Yosef says Shinu Hashem is equivalent to Shinu Maaseh, that's not exactly true. It does work as a Kinyan, but it works in a Kinyan with conjunction with other items like Yeush. But it does not work by itself like Shinu Maaseh. Shinu Maaseh is still something that is a stronger form of Kinyan than any other form that you can create or any other shinu that you can create. Not Yeush alone, not Shinu Hashem alone. Shinu Hashem together with Yeush can't possibly do that. Or Shinu Maaseh, subpar Shinu Maaseh together with Yeush can do that. But Shinu Maaseh, that's a strong and biyadayim, significant change that can create a kinyan without any help from anything else. Now Tosafot over here explains why the case of Meirish is so important is because he says, V'stam Meirish, kevin shebano b'birah mityashim abalim mimenu. Since once the person builds the beam into the house, the Balim generally give up hope. That's why we know that the Yeush would happen over here. So that's why you have Yeush and Shinui Hashem. And that's why together they can generate the Shinui that should have created the Kinyan over here. But in the end, what Rabbi Yosef answers is, yes, there might be Yeush, but there's a lack of Shinui Hashem. And that lack of Shinui Hashem is in the end what makes it that if you did not have Takanat Tashavim, you would actually have to pull the beam out of the house and return it. Then the Tosafot goes on to say, wait a minute, if that's the case, then the question is not just a question on Rav Yosef, it should be a question on Rabba as well. Rabba thinks that Yeush is Koneh. So if you say here that the Stam Meirish is the case of Yeush, then it should be a problem for Rabba and not for Rav Yosef. And you should know that there were Gemaras that have a Girsah that thought the question was a question both on Rav Yosef and on Rabba, not just a question on Rav Yosef. On the other hand, Tosafot's not comfortable with that, and therefore he says, V'nira l'faresh de below Yeush Ayri. It's the case here that without Yeush, l'hachi parich l'Rav Yosef. And this is what they're asking Rav Yosef. Well, wait a minute. According to Baal HaTos, if you don't have Yeush here, there was no Kinyan. Because even Shinui Hashem, Rav Yosef agrees, doesn't work by itself. He still needs Yeush. And he says, well, so you have to alter. Ela, Iyamart, de Shinui Hashem katan im Yeush kani. If you say that a small Shinui Hashem, along with Yeush, works, im kein Shinui Hashem gadol ki hai de meirish, yesh l'kadol b'fnei atzmo. So Tosafot then says, the question of the Gemara is that Rav Yosef, your Shinui Hashem should work exactly like Shinui Maaseh, which is that when you have a big Shinui Maaseh, it works on its own. When you have a small Shinui Maaseh, it works together with the Yeush. So same thing over here. A small Shinui Hashem should work together with the Yeush. A big Shinui Hashem, that should work with even without Yeush. What you're asking is what Tosafot's proof is, that yesterday when it said when you have a Tlet Unayal, the Gemara assumed that that Shinui Hashem would be sufficient to generate a Shinui that would be Kone by itself. Why didn't it work? Because the Gemara in the end said that it's no Shinui Hashem. Because a Shor is a Shor Ben Yomo. And so therefore there is no Shinui Hashem. But the Gemara acknowledged, had it been that there would have been a Shinui Hashem, that would have been significant enough to generate the Kinyan by itself, even without Yeush. And that's Tosafot's proof to the fact that maybe Rav Yosef believes that Shinui Hashem works when it's a super Shinui Hashem. And that's the question over here by the Meirish. We're thinking now that it's a big Shinui Hashem. That big Shinui Hashem should make it that you can be koneh even without Yeush, and it should be worked by itself. That's one way Tosafot deals with it. So Tosafot now created for us two different categories of Shinui Hashem. Super Shinui Hashem, which is equivalent to super Shinui Maaseh, and then a weak Shinui Hashem, which is equivalent to a weak Shinui Maaseh, which will require Yeush together with it. Then Tosafot backpedals and says, V'od yesh tomar at b'chol makom havi Shinui Hashem greida koni the Rav Yosef below Yeush. Goes back and says that maybe what I said on the previous Amud is not true. Rav Yosef thinks that Shinui Hashem works irrespective of whether there is Yeush or not. So the Mardesh and Tzorech Yeush be'orot, and the only reason you need Yeush by the Orot, by the case of the Machshava for Tuma, is because La Mishum Kinyan, it's not because of the Kinyan, but rather the Kinyan Avi Mishum Shinui Hashem, L'chudei, by Yeush Ein Tzorech HaLakdei Shioil Machshavat Yichudo L'Shav Yabarzin. Dim Lav Yeush, then Ein Kan Shinui Hashem. The reason you need Yeush over there is not to give you the Kinyan. The Kinyan happens because of Shinui Hashem. The problem is you need the Yeush in order to allow you to have the Machshova to change the object. Chem Hekdesh Vayimo Yeush. And that's the same reason by Hekdesh you need Yeush. Because without the Yeush, the Shem Hekdesh can't be Chal on the item or on the animal. And the Shinui Hashem won't work. Chem Shinui Rishut. Main Yeush, ain't Shinui Rishut. Avo Meirish, below Yeush, Nameiku Shinui Hashem. But here, by the case of the Meirish, our thought process is that the Shinui Hashem should work alone because that by itself should be sufficient grounds and there's nothing else we call tethering the item. By Hekdesh and by Machshava to Tuma, the original owners still have a tether on the object even with Shinui Hashem. And therefore you require both Shinui Hashem and Yeush in order to free it of the original Balim's control or connection to the object in order it to be Makdishit for Hekdesh the Mizbeach. Or in order to have a Machshava to make a Tamei, you need that Yeush. So that Yeush is what facilitates the ability to create the Shinui Hashem. Because by Hekdesh, if you don't have Yeush from the Balim, you can't be Makdish. If you can't be Makdish, there's no Shinui Hashem. By the case of the Orot, to change them from hides into, you know, picnic blankets, it has to be yours with your Machshava. But you can only create the Shinui Hashem if the Balim already gave up their ownership. So the Yeush is a prerequisite for generating the Shinui Hashem. So therefore, Tosafot says in those cases, you require Yeush and Shinui Hashem, because the Yeush is what allows you to generate the Shinui Hashem. By the Meirish, you can generate the Shinui Hashem even without the Yeush, because you just take the board and then you build it into the house, even without a change of the board, where there's no Shinui Maaseh, but there's a significant Shinui Hashem here, and there's no requirement of Yeush for that Shinui Hashem to take place. The Shinui Hashem takes place because of the placement of the board inside the building now. That's what changes its name. And therefore, Tosfot says at the end, Rav Yosef will say Shinur Hashem works all the time. It's sufficient in and of itself to create a kinyan. Just a question of how you get to the Shinur Hashem. Sometimes you can't get to a Shinur Hashem without Yeush. And that's what's being described before. Two views in the Baal Tosfot as to what Rav Yosef Shita is. One view is that Shinur Hashem requires Yeush in order to work. Again, that's at least when it's a regular Shinur Hashem. If it's a super Shinur Hashem, maybe it can work without Yeush. The other view within Rav Yosef is that Rav Yosef thinks Shinur Hashem works by itself all the time. There's just sometimes that the Shinur Hashem can't take effect until you have ownership, and therefore you require Yeush as a prerequisite to give you the ownership to generate the Shinur Hashem. And that's why you need Yeush, not because Shinur Hashem by itself is not sufficient, but in order to generate the Shinur Hashem, you need Yeush. Okay, we're going to stop here, three lines down on the top of Samach Zayin Amud Aleph.